Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 307, featuring Alessandro Cangelosi, freelance lighting TD, effects TD, and head of Protus VFX School, which is in Italy, and a really cool guy. And we also got Alessandro as a reference from our good friend Lynette over at Gnomon, because she's working with he's been doing some stuff for Gnomon Workshop, which has been really cool. Kristen, tell us a little bit about what you thought of Alessandro's podcast.
Well, he seems like such a sweet guy, and
Very sweet, yes.
And he's living in Italy, or lives in Italy, so I'm a little jello of him. Yep. But yeah, amazing career. He's, you know, done a lot and started off like developing software and then moved his way into visual effects. It was a nice hour of like listening to everything and just all the stuff he's done. And now like he teaches, as you said, at the Proteus VFX school in Italy, and he teaches Houdini, which I like Houdini because it's my favorite.
Do you like Houdini?
Yeah, because I like the name.
Do you know Houdini?
Well, I know.
Oh, you like the name.
It's my favorite name.
Houdini, I remember when I first started in visual effects, I was a Maya user. I was a 3DS and Maya user, and I was like, I think I want to learn Houdini. And someone looked at me and goes, you may want to pick up smoking again. It's like, it's going to be stressful. Yeah, it's a really great package. And obviously now it's become really popular and a great tool for a lot of people to use. So I'm very excited about that. And to see people like Alessandro teaching it to people is very important because it's going to be serving the community well. Great. Kristen, we have a few announcements. We should note that we recorded this podcast well in advance because we're going on our end of the year holidays. So, or taken off from the office. So we're doing a little bit ahead of time. But Kristen, what are some of the events coming up?
All right. So this will be in 2021 and it's going to be January 12th. And it's going to be a free webinar for V-Ray 5 for Rhino. And you can find that out at chaosgroup.com/events and sign up for it.
Perfect. Again, that's chaosgroup.com/events. And it is January 12th, 2021, V-Ray 5 for Rhino. So that's really cool. And we also have a lot of other announcements, including the fact that Vantage is out. I know we've said it a few times, but Vantage is our first standalone package, which is a full ray tracer and fully real time as well, fully real time, no rasterization. And in order to celebrate that, we started a competition along with our friends at Lenovo, NVIDIA, Kitbash 3D, and CG Architect, called the Building Utopia Competition. And that can be found out at buildingutopia.cgarchitect.com. And you should totally register for that and check it out. And your chance to try out Vantage, which, by the way, is free for a limited time. So you guys can take full advantage of Vantage. And also we have V-Ray 5 for SketchUp has been out for a little bit now. And includes some really interesting new features, including V-Ray Vision. So I should check that out because I think that's pretty cool. And lastly, V-Ray Benchmark has been updated to V-Ray 5 and has been changed completely, actually. We're doing three tests now, CPU, CUDA, and RTX, three separate tests. And again, V-Ray 5 Benchmark is free. So you guys can download that benchmark.chaosgroup.com to get that. And if you got any new hardware for the holidays, this is your chance to check it out and see how it scores up against the rest of it on our benchmark site. Cool. Okay, cool. If people want to know more about the podcast, where can they go?
You can go to facebook.com/CG Garage Podcast or chaosgroup.com/CG Garage.
Perfect. And if you guys have any ideas for cool new episodes of the podcast to do in 2021, let us know. labs@chaosgroup.com is the best place to communicate those ideas. We've gotten great ideas from you guys in the past, and many of those guests have actually been on. So we are up for all of those as well. And remember, of course, as your last thing you do for your New Year's resolution, give us a rating and a review on Apple Podcast and let us know what you think and make sure and share us with your friends. We would love that as well. Before we sign off for 2020, I would like to have a special note of thanks to my very fantastic producer, Kristen, who has done such an amazing job all year and been such a great person. She is really the strength behind this podcast in a lot of ways, because she keeps everything going, all the schedules, and she does a lot of the mixing too, if you guys don't realize that. She's all Kristen. And she's been really, really great. And I could not be happier to have her as part of the podcast team, which is really just her and I. Her and me, I guess. So thank you so much, Kristen. You've been wonderful.
Oh, thank you.
All right. You want to wish everyone a happy new year?
Yes. Happy new year. And yay for 2021. I'm excited.
Welcome to another CG Garage, where the chaos group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're going to fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passe. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fresnel.
Well, this is great. I'm so glad you're able to do this this podcast with us, and to get on board. The CG Garage, it's lots of stuff that's lots of great people that we've had on, and I'm really excited to have you on as well. And thank you for Lynette for suggesting
this. It is a pleasure. It is really a pleasure to be part of this project.
Yeah. Have you listened to some of these podcasts before in the past?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, great.
It's really, really interesting. So okay. It was when Daniela Volpe from Grammont said to me, do you want to participate? I said, yes, it's amazing. So it's really
perfect.
Great.
Perfect. Okay. Well, since you have heard some of them, you know some of the backstory. I mean, we would love to know a little bit about your backstory and how you got to do the kind of things that you're doing.
Sure.
What is your origin story? Where does it start? Where was your passion for art?
I can say that's a really long story. You know, I'm 45 now, so
yeah.
It's a long time. I started to work with computers at, I think, maybe 8 or 9, because I was in love with programming and video games and stuff like that. So my first computer was, if I remember, the ZX Spectrum. So really nice home computer, you know. So at the beginning was just playing, because I was a child and was just interested to understand how to programming video games with a computer. Mm-hmm. But then in a few years, I was in love with the graphics inside the video games. So there was something really great for me to see the graphics in the video games. You know, the graphics at this time was really, really bad. We are talking about.
Yeah, really, you didn't have much memory.
Just pixel around the video. So it was not so great.
Right.
But then I discovered that there was a computer. It was developed by Acorn in the UK, and this was the Acorn Archimedes, and it is still there in my office.
Wow.
And it was amazing, because at this time, the time was really great. We had colors. We are talking about 256 colors, so it was amazing. Right. And so my father bought this computer, and I started to paint something with a 2D paint, and I felt in love with graphics. It was the beginning, and it was great, because there was a software on this computer. It was called Render Bender. It is obviously not known to the market, but it was a really strange software. There was no user interface, no viewport, no buttons, nothing. You had to describe, you have to write the description of the scene. So I started, because it was great, because I was in love with programming, and I had the possibility to write my own scene in 3D, writing in a language similar to the C++. And it was great, because it was the beginning. The first time I saw my image rendered, it took around 20 hours. It was something like amazing.
Wow.
You know, the old images with maybe some sphere around, some cylinder, some metal, stuff like that. Nothing that's so great. But this was the beginning.
Yeah.
So then the great thing was when I know about 3D Studio under MS-DOS. So the first release by Autodesk. Right. So my father, that was my first supporter, the main supporter I had, my first fan, said, okay.
But that was not on the Acorn. You weren't doing that on the Acorn.
I was. Yes, it was great because my father said, okay, let's buy another computer. And we bought my first 386, the first IBM, the first machine. And I started with the first 3D studio. There was no internet, no book, no nothing. I'm feeling really old at the moment. There was no internet. Yep. It's really strange. Yep. And then so
this is the first 3D studio, right?
The first 3D studio. So
interesting. I had Gary Yost on the podcast, who was the guy who invented it. he was just on not long ago. So
that's why it's amazing to be there today. So that was the beginning because I was 16, and for 3 or 4 years I played with 3D studio, trying to understand how it works, trying to understand everything because there was nothing to understand algorithms, stuff like rendering, modeling, nothing. So I had to do everything from zero, everything from scratch. And then I was at my school, and at school I was studying to be a programmer because it was my first interest. But as soon as the school has finished, I started to work on architecture studios. It was not so great, you know, but at the time we are talking about 1990, so it was really a lot of years ago. It was the maximum you can do here in Italy, because we have to say that Italy is not the best place to do visual effects or to do computer graphics. Sure. And I think you can know about it. So I started to work in this way, but it was really sad to do homes, rooms, and stuff like that. So it was really, really bad. And I continued to work preparing a lot of stuff at my home. My idea was, okay, I saw this movie at the cinema. Let's try to redo this thing with 3D Studio.
Right.
And then I prepared a really little reel, and I was in some studios here in Rome, and I found the first job in computer graphics. So I started to do some visual effects here in Italy, some animation for the multimedia market. It is something that today is not more available. We are talking about the CD-ROM market.
Yeah, but with Macromedia Director and Flash and all that stuff.
Yeah, that's really, really.
They remember, but everyone thought that was going to be a big thing, you know.
Yeah, it was amazing at the time. So, you know, for me, it was a really nice job because I had the possibility to make animation, to make really great stuff. And it was the beginning. So then I said, okay, I want to do visual effects. So I had to do something. So I decided to open my own company. And in this way, I had a way to start collaborating with Cinecittà Studios. It's the main studios here in Rome. And that was the beginning. So for some years, you know, I continued in this way. But what I can say, the production here in Italy are really not so nice. The projects are not so complex. You know, we have not so heavy visual effects there. Right. So then I think around 13 years ago, my life changes completely because I had the possibility to know my actual wife. So that's why it's changed. And I decided to change completely my job. So I decided, okay, I don't want to work anymore for any Italian company. I want to do visual effects for international production. Yeah. And it was not so simple because my problem was that I had no possibility to move away from Italy. For some family problems. So, you know, it is not so simple to work remotely for visual effects studios around the world. It's the same. It's complex also for the video games market. So I said, okay, what I can say? I said, okay, let's open a website. I tried to make my own gallery with all the stuff I prepared before. And it was amazing because I had an interview in the over CG Arena, the website. And I was contacted by a guy, and it was previously a supervisor at the orphanage, the old visual effects company.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he said, okay, you know, I was checking your interview. It was really nice. You seem a nice guy. We have a job for you. We are a company. We are creating a lot of stuff for the Ghostbuster video game. And we have a really bad problem. The previous company done a really bad job. We have to redo everything from zero. And we have 160 shots to do. And I said, okay, that's really nice. How many guys we are? And he said to me, I'm alone. So you are the second artist. So okay. We have 2 months to do everything. It was really amazing because it was crazy, but it was
this really, is for a video really, game, you said?
For a video game. It was all okay. The video cinematics inside the video game. So okay. We redo everything from zero, and it was amazing because I was not so fast as the other artists, you know, because it was the first really big project. But I done something around 60 shots in 2 months. So it was really, that's really, really great. And yeah. I done everything with 3D, 3DS Max at the time. So and that was the beginning because it was the first international project. So, you know, when you start with the first international project, other companies check what you've done. So it was most simple to start and do more stuff in this market. Previously in the video game market, but you know, my idea was to do visual effects. It was something like I have it in my mind and in my heart. So I had to find a way. And I done something for more small stuff like commercials. And then there was a really nice other thing that was in my life. It was that I was called by Pixelmondo, Los Angeles, because they was working on, I don't know, I'm not sure if in English is the right name for the movie from Roland Emmerich. I'm talking about 2012, maybe is the right name. Okay. And they said to me, okay, we are in a rush. Maybe it's for my life. Every time there is a rush. And we have to prepare the first trailer of the movie. We have just 3 weeks, and we have to find a way to create some tools for the shading artists to have snow, rocks, and stuff like that around the environment. And they called me because in the past, with my previous company, I developed a plugin for 3ds Max, the natural shaders. So it was a shader collection with procedural feature to create snow, rocks and stuff like that. So they said, can you do something for us? And I said, okay, yes, there is no time, but I can do something. It was amazing. I done just this part. So I created some procedural shader inside 3ds Max to solve this problem. And then they said to me, okay, you are really nice. Can you be with us here in Los Angeles? And they said again, sorry, I can't because, you know, as I said, I can't move from Rome, from Italy. So I had to wait again some years because later I was talking with a friend of mine that has a company here in Rome. And it is a commercial company. They make videos for commercial and stuff like that. But we have a friend together that is a guy that who works now, I think it's not more in the Centropolis company, but before it was in Centropolis. And they contacted us and said, hey guys, maybe we have a chance to do something about the previous visualization in Independence Day.
Okay.
What do you think? We can do it? And I said, yes, that's the time to do something. So I said, okay, let's start. And we started from scratch because the company was not ready to do something like that. But I said, okay, let's prepare everything. We prepared the workflow, the pipeline, and everything from zero. And we started with previews, and then they loved what we done. So we had a chance to move to the post feeds, and then we had the possibility to do some final shot for the movies. And it was great because then Roland Emmerich loved what we done.
Yeah. What sequence were you working on?
We done inside the movie, we made all the previous iteration and the post feeds for the final attack when the big, the large scale alien ship is coming to the Earth. And we done also the post feed for the first part when we see that the signal sent by the previous alien ship is sent to the queen on the other planet. So we made stuff around. And then they said, okay.
Had you done pre-viz or post-viz before this, or?
It was the first time. It was the first time because, you know, in the video game market, maybe I'd done it, but just let's say we do the preview inside 3D Studio just to make sure that we have the right animation and stuff like that. So it was the first time, but I had in time, you know, I was waiting since years to do something like that. So everything was in my mind. So it was great because then they asked us to do also the new Centropolis logo for the anniversary, and now it's on all the movies from Roland Emmerich, so that's really great. It was amazing. So it was, again, a new chance to be part of this project, a really big, large-scale project for visual effects. Yeah. And that's all. Then now I'm working on some minor project because, you know, again, the problem is that I had to work remotely from Rome, so it's not so simple. That's, I think, that's all.
But that's really, I mean, okay, so there's a lot of things that I want to go back to. Well, first of all, let's talk about that. I mean, talk about working from home. I mean, currently, right now, everyone's working from home. So it's not necessarily an issue.
Now, Chris, sorry, maybe that's really strange because since year it was a problem for me because working remotely was impossible. And now it is said, but everyone needs to work by remote. So maybe something is changing in the, over the market. So maybe there is more possibility for artists all around the world to work on really big production. And that's really nice.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the people are trying to figure out there are definitely limitations that people are having to overcome working from home. But people like you that have always worked from home or always had to work remotely, you are going to bring something to the table that's going to teach people about a workflow and a way of working that's going to be really good. Because the fact is, nothing is going to get made unless you work remotely right now. So they are forced to do that. How long have you been doing this from home? 20 years, 30 years?
Now I'm thinking from home is something around 13 years. Before I had my own office in my company. So now it is something around 13 or 14, maybe 14.
Yeah. So
it can be done, but you know, that's why I love this way of working. So maybe I can understand that the company are scared about this way because maybe some artists have not the mindful to work from home and be productive, stay on the project, work the right hours and stuff like that. So I can understand that there is some problem about it, but you know, if the artists take care about the project, you can work from home as when you like. There is no one that is saying when, why, in which way. That's really great. And you know, now I have my boy, a child of 3 years, so you can imagine that here is like crazy, and we are waiting for the second one. So you can understand that here is like a circus. So that's the best way for some artists that maybe it's a little bit older and maybe has its own family and can move all around the world. Because the main problem is that maybe I can decide to move, let's say, Los Angeles. And then maybe after 6 months, you have to move in UK. And then maybe in another country. And that's really complex with a family. So that's why it's impossible for me.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's one of the reasons I left the industry is because, you know, they were saying, oh, well, you should move to Vancouver. And I'm like, well, I have a family. And I'm not going to take them up. No. And they're like, well, take your family. Vancouver's beautiful. It's like, yes, but then what's after Vancouver? Montreal?
Right.
You know,
right.
I was like, oh, yeah, guess what? It is Montreal.
Right.
So, you know, so I can't, it just wouldn't have been fair to do that. And I think that's kind of where I feel. Honestly, is the thing to do. But let's go back to 2012. You said you were doing procedural stuff then, right?
Yes.
And you had some shaders that you had done. What kind of shaders were these exactly? Explain a little bit more about that.
Okay. That's something really, really interesting for me because, you know, many years ago, I saw that many artists have no control over the noises. I know that's really simple. Inside 3ds Max, we had not so much procedural maps, but I was in love with the procedurality because, you know, with just one maps, you can control some parameters and create everything you want. You can add aging effects. You can control the glossiness, the reflection. You can add more details over the surface. You can create some displacement, and you can do a lot of things. So I had an idea. I said, okay, procedure is really similar to chaos and nature. So why we can't create some natural shaders, something that can simulate, for example, rocks, snow, ice, sea, water, and stuff like that, just using the procedure inside 3ds Max. So I started to create some tests. I picked smoke and the noise, just this map, and then the cellular, just to make some tests. And I said, okay, it's really nice. I can create some prototypes about natural shaders. And I started to post some stuff over the web, on a website. And a lot of guys was really interested in the images where I was talking about. Because, you know, for example, we created a sea shader that was able to create everything, all the waves and all the details just from a grid. I know that today it's really simple and it's something that can be done with a button inside a software. But we are talking about when we created this shader, I created this shader, we were talking about 2003. It was the beginning for this project. So it was really great. And I said, okay, let's prototype 6 or 7 shaders to create some natural surface. And let's see if we can create something more complex. So I decided to use the Max script to create a user interface and having a scripted shader inside 3ds Max. And it was the beginning. Then I created some code to control, obviously, how the various maps and the nested layers can interact with the other. And it was really great. Obviously, it was not so fast because it was Max script. So I decided to find a programmer here in Italy. And I found a guy, a really nice guy. He worked with us on this project, and later it went to Pixar. So it was a really nice guy. And he helped me to create the C++ version. So we moved to the C++ because it was faster. And then we talked with TurboSquid, and TurboSquid was our main distributor all around the world. So it was a really nice project. And that's why then they contacted me from Pixamondo, because essentially they had the need to create, for example, they had an environment, the entire environment when we see in the movie the airplane crash. So they had the entire environment, it was completely 3D, and then they had the matte painting just for the background.
Right.
And they had a problem. There was no time for the artist to control everything by hand. Painting the maps, painting masks to control where we have the rocks, where we have the ice, where we have the snow. So they asked, okay, you've done this shader. Why you can create a new kind of shader that can mix everything and giving us the control, the possibility to control where we like to have the snow, the rocks, and stuff like that. So that's the next step. I decided to create a new shader that was working playing with my rock shader, the ice shader, and the snow shader. And everything was controlled by textures and by, so just masks, by masks and parameters. So you can decide, for example, how the temperature is creating, for example, ice or snow or melting ice. And when the ice is covered by snow, or maybe the snow is falling down and then you have just rocks. So everything was just inside the user interface. And it was really simple to use for the artist. And
yeah, because these are, you know what you want it to look like, not how to get there. So the parameter, it's interesting.
So that was really nice. So with less time, they had just to prepare some masks to say, okay, this area of the terrain is just rocks. There we have the ice and there we have snow. And then they can control the parameter to find the final look. And it was really great. And it was done for 3ds Max and V-Ray. So
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. Pixar was a big V-Ray user, on that project. I remember that. So it's really interesting. I always love that kind of stuff. And of course, now, like you said, there's a lot of tools that have come around. Things like Substance Painter and all of those things are really interesting. But I do remember that. I do remember the what you created back then. It was really, really kind of cool. So it's kind of great to hear. Like I was like, oh, that's the guy who did that. So it's kind of cool. So that's really interesting. Now, when you generally, would you call yourself, I mean, obviously you've dabbled in some little bit of programming, you did a little bit of post-viz, you did some pre-viz. Do you call yourself generally a generalist in what you do?
Not anymore. At the beginning, I was a generalist because, you know, here in Italy, it's impossible to be visual effects, TD, or maybe a lighting TD or stuff like that. Right. Here, you have to do everything from the model to the final rendering.
Right.
But then, you know, I was in love with some stuff more than the other. So, for example, I loved the look depth, so lighting, shading, or rendering, and I loved the visual effects. So, I mean, I decided to split between these two conditions. So I can call me a lighting TD and an FX TD. It depends on the project, and it depends on the client need and stuff like that. But I can say that I'm also a generalist, obviously, but, you know, sure. I prefer to work on something like look dev or maybe FX.
So that's your preferred thing, is to do look dev and effects, right? Right. Yeah. So interesting. What kind of stuff do you do effects? You're obviously working a lot more in Houdini these days, or things of that nature.
You know, that's a really sad stuff, because I'm a 3ds Max guy since the beginning, as you know, and I try to use it every time, on every kind of production. I'm also a beta tester, so I love it. But, you know, when we worked on Independence Day, I decided, okay, let's do it with 3ds Max, because I love it, but it was not so simple. I have to say that it was not so simple, because every one of us knows the problem that 3ds Max has, just because it's a really old software. So there are many things that are changing, many new great stuff, but we have a lot of code that it's really old. We are talking about some code is maybe 15 or maybe 20 years old. So it's not it is not so modern. Okay. You know, so it was developed when the computer graphics was completely different. So I have to say that we've done the job. We've done in time. We've done a really great job, but it was like the hell. We had to fight with a lot of problems. So, you know, it was not simple, because we was maybe one of two or maybe three team that was using 3ds Max, because there was Lux Studios that was using 3ds Max.
Studios, yes, in Germany.
Right.
Yeah.
But we had to play with a asset send, for example, from Scanline, that they was working with Maya, and Pixel was working with Maya too, so it was not so simple, and we had to work with the assets really, really big. It was the first time I had to work with the Queen Ship, and it was something amazing, with a lot of texture, a high resolution texture, a lot of displacement, so it was really heavy. And that's the first moment I said, maybe I have to find something else, maybe I have to add something to my workflow to be more productive, maybe for more complex more complex projects. So I decided to move to Houdini for the visual effects. And I have to say that it was not so... I know that it's really a complex software, so it needs really a lot of time to understand how it works. But I think it's not so complex for 3ds Max artists, because we have some kind of procedural feature inside 3ds Max. It is a procedural software. Maybe it's not so complex and so powerful, maybe, as Houdini, but it was not so complex to move to a new software. And then I searched for a new software also for the look dev, because I was searching for something that was able to create a really large scale scene, because in one scene inside the Independence Day movie for the post-viz, because I have to say that Roland Emmerich asked to have a post-viz with a really high quality of rendering. So it was something in between the pre-viz and the final quality. So it was really heavy and complex. And he asked us to create a scene where we are approaching to a planet, a dead planet. And we have to fly through an alien city that is completely, you know, there was destruction, because it's the planet where the alien queen was before coming to the Earth. So, you know, we have a lot of assets. We are creating a mega city, because it's bigger than the alien queen. So it's amazing. And so it was really heavy to manage something like that in 3ds Max, because it was not so simple to use the external reference. It was not simple to have a lot of stuff inside the scene. So I said, okay, let's try Clarice from Isotropics. And it was amazing. I felt in love with that software. So actually, I have to say that the most of my projects actually are inside Clarice for the look dev.
Interesting.
You know, obviously, every day there is something I'm feeling that I ask him for something that before was in 3ds Max, maybe this feature or the other feature. You know, at the end of the day, I have to be productive. Again, I have the family, so I have not so much time to work. I can no more work 15 or maybe 20 hours a day. So yeah. I have to be really, really fast. So, you know, I need to work fast and I need a really fast software. But, you know, 3ds Max is still my love, I have to say. So.
Okay. I mean, but there are some changes. Obviously, Tiflow is becoming more popular in Max and stuff like that. So those things, there's solutions that are out there. But yeah, I think it's interesting. People are becoming very diverse in their software. I mean, I'm not necessarily knocking Max or saying Houdini's better or Calibris or whatever, but I think people are becoming more diverse and being able to move between software is a bigger deal right now. And especially, you know, If someone like you who has to sort of jump around and do all kinds of different things, I'm just curious about like where do you think things are going? Do you think things like USD formats are going to be helping you, or like, you know, what are your thoughts about the future of where things softwares are going to go? Are you going to be like no, you're going to go this software, or you're just going to be diverse and try to use a bunch of things?
I have to say that the first thing, because, you know, actually mainly I'm working as a teacher in my own school. And the first thing I say to my students, to the guys, I say, you know, the software is not the most important thing. Every software has more powerful feature or maybe something that is better. But, you know, you have to understand how the stuff works. You have to understand the algorithms. You have to understand how to do this job. That's a job. Right. It's not important if you are using 3ds Max or Houdini or stuff like that. It's not important. The most important thing is the artist. So I know that if you find your workflow, if you find the best pipeline that fit for your needs or for the client needs, you can do with the software. It's not so important. And there are many things that are moving fast over the market. And I think, for example, you talked about the USD. USD is really nice. I have to say it is something, you know, in the 2004, we was at the SIGGRAPH presenting the natural shaders. And we have the possibility to talk with many guys in LA, with many developer and stuff like that. So we had some contacts with Mental Images from Germany. And they asked us to if we had some projects we like to work on with maybe a bigger project than the natural shaders. And we were thinking about a new, I know that maybe it sounds crazy, but we were thinking about creating a new 3D software, a complete new 3D software. It's something
that's
crazy.
That's not crazy. That's not crazy.
But, you know, it is nice because obviously, you know, to do something like that, when you are also working on many other stuff, you have to have the right money to pick all the guys to develop something like that. So I have to say it is never done. It was never done because there was no money to do something like so big. But it was really nice because at the time we were talking to have a really complex software with all the modules were outside the software. So it was really modular. And we decided to have a GPU renderer at the time. It was really the beginning. Maybe we had just the GPU working with the video games. And the other idea was to create a new standard format for the scene description. And it is something that today is the universal scene description. So, you know, I'm in love with this way to work because it's a great possibility to move the stuff around the workflow and the pipeline around the artist, play with the scene in a really more complex and more interesting way. So I think it's really nice. It is really nice to know that every single software is trying to add the USD inside. So We see, for example, Houdini with Solaris. We have inside Clarice. We see that Maya and 3ds Max are moving to have USD. So I think that's really nice. And something that is really nice, it's also the real time. I mean, technology like Unreal. Because I think that step by step, it will be every time more powerful and every time more useful to do a lot of stuff. Maybe it was before integrated just for, let's say, pre-beats. But, you know, now the quality is really high. Now, you know, you have the possibility to manage really complex scenes. So, for example, actually, we can use it for the background. We can use for the environment. So I think that step by step, using the offline rendering and the real-time rendering can be maybe the best way from both the world to create amazing projects.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, in terms of the USD thing, you know, there's, you know, working for a software company, we hear all the time like, oh, this is the new thing. You have to implement this and this. And we have implemented so many different, you know, shading languages, OSL and MetaSL, like all these different things, like it's so many and hardly anyone uses them, right? Or very few people using. So when someone says, no, there's a new scene description, it's USD and it's developed by Pixar. I was like, okay, we'll see, right? But it does seem that this is gonna have to happen. And this is really a problem that's been around for too long because people are still exchanging data with like OBJ format. And that's been around for 30 years, right? Or FBX, which is really like left over from the Motion Builder. I mean, there's very really not great alternatives right now. So having something like USD is really great. And I don't think Alembic was going to be enough to cut it. You needed something that's a little bit more robust. So sorry, I didn't mean to go through that, but I was like, I bet you he has an opinion about this USD thing. See what he has to say. Well, that's great. That's really cool. Okay. You touched a little bit on the idea that you have your own school and that you're teaching. So I want to get into teaching. How did that all start for you?
That's another love I have. You can say, okay, how much love you have. Yeah. But I started to teach really, really soon. I was, if I remember, 23 years old. So at the beginning, I was working in the computer graphics. And I started teaching here in a school in Rome. And then I teach it for, if I remember, 2 years and stuff like that. And again, it was not so good because, you know, again, Italy situation is not so nice for computer graphics. So it was not simple to teach in the right way because you was just a teacher. So someone else decided the curriculum outline, decided how to move the course and stuff like that. So later, I decided to stop and to wait for a new possibility in the future. So some years ago, I had the possibility to collaborate with CG Cookie, that today is a really well-known community about Blender. But at the beginning, we started with 3ds Max. So we started to release some tutorials around. It was really simple because we worked on basic tutorial, nothing special. Right. But it was nice because it was the first project teaching for international students. And it was really helpful for me to understand better how to create something for this market. Okay. And then I was called by Gnomon and they asked me to prepare a workshop for Mentor Ray at the Mentor Ray for 3ds Max. So it was another possibility. So this was the first project for a bigger market, maybe something more complex. And so at the end, you know, I was really busy working on commercial gigs, on projects and stuff like that. But, you know, again, now I have the family, now we have my boy and the time is not so much. So as you said, it's not so simple today to stay on production. Because, you know, maybe my client is in the USA, maybe the other client is in Singapore, for example. So it's complex to be
the time zones are hard.
You know, it's really, really complex. So, you know, now it's really more complex than before. So I said, okay, let's start a new project, a new side project. And I decided to found essentially a website, and it was called Proteus VFX School. And they said, okay, let's start maybe just me. So let's release some tutorials. Let's create some courses, some, you know, pre-recorded courses. So the lesson was recorded before, and I released some initial project, but it was not so simple because I was doing something like a side project. So maybe the guys was, you know, waiting 1 year to have the entire course because I was not so fast to release the lessons. But last year, I said, okay, let's start to give more time to the school and less time to the production. So I started a course for Clarice, the first course available for Clarice. And it was really amazing because it was the first one when I had more time to focus on the course. And this year was great because we released a lot of stuff and we said, okay, now we have a lot of students around the world. I think it's time to create something for Italian students because it seems strange, but I have no Italian students, maybe two. Just two. So it's strange, you know, but I said, okay, I think there is time. It is time to start creating something here, trying to give the artist the possibility to be prepared in the right way, to have the right curriculum outline, to have someone that worked on many projects for many years and maybe has the right know-how to say how you can be an artist and how you can start to be productive and work on many projects or maybe start playing with projects around the world. And so I said, okay, let's open the business for Italian artists too. So that's the moment. Now we are opening the physical school because before was essentially an online school. So now we decided to open the office there. Obviously, we decided when we have the pandemic chaos, but you know, it's not the best moment, but it's a little bit complex, but we are trying to do. And again, you know, we are preparing stuff for the lesson. We are creating a really large course. It's a masterclass. So we are trying to create 1 year course with another school here. The school is Kayapa Academy, and it's the school founded by Mauro Baldessera. I think you know the artist. And we decided to create a really complex curriculum outline. So 1 year of course, trying to starting from scratch. And the final step is to really high complex stuff or for look development or maybe for visual effects. It depends on the stuff you like to do. And that's what we are trying now. And you know, the really strange thing is that we are trying to move the stuff here in Italy. And I'm still contacted by the international students asking, okay, are you doing this course just for Italian guys? Can you do it for English guys? So we are trying to understand if maybe it is good to do something also for the international market. So we have to decide because maybe if there is, you know, the right amount of guys for the international market, because, you know, it is strange for an Italian school thinking to have also international students. It is maybe the first time, maybe we have just one school here in Italy that has also international students. Because, you know, again, if you talk about Italian companies or maybe Italian visual effects school, you know, it is not so good. The quality is bad. They had no big scale production. So obviously it is not so simple that maybe a guy from Los Angeles say, okay, I decide to go in a school in Rome because it is really strange. Maybe you have to go at UK or maybe in Canada or maybe in Los Angeles. That's the market, you know, so it's really strange. But who knows? Maybe it works. We are thinking about it.
Interesting. Well, I think it's interesting because, you know, like you were saying at the beginning, I mean, you had to teach yourself everything, right? Like when you learned 3D. And so now the fact that you're sort of creating curriculums for people and designating that, it's kind of interesting because you've experienced that and you don't have anything from your past to model from. You're basically doing it only from your experience and only from what that happens.
Go ahead. You know, maybe I just to add something, and there is something that is interesting for me that sometimes it's complex to make clear to the guys today because they know a completely different market. And you know, during the lesson, I love to teach old school stuff. Because, you know, today you have a lot of features. You have the button to create something. You can do inside the Houdini. You can press a button and you have an explosion. Okay, right. That's nice, but you know, that's everything is automatic, and you tomorrow you will have the director, you have the visual effects supervisor that maybe ask for something. Maybe they ask for something that there is no time to manage this this project. There is no feature to control everything. So maybe it is good to do something that we have to do when we had nothing, because at the beginning right. we had really nothing inside the software.
Right. Yeah, yeah, it's true. It's true. It's always good to know how things work a little bit, you know? So it's like, you know how to drive the car, but you also know how to change right. the oil and the...
Right.
<you know? laughs> So yeah, that's a really good point. That's a really, really good point. But I mean, do you feel like in Italy now? I mean, obviously you said there wasn't much in Italy. Do you feel there's more demand? There's more people that are interested in this as an idea? Is there a bigger market now in Italy than compared to when you were starting?
You know, when I started, so we are talking about 25 years ago, I said, okay, I love this stuff. Let's start. Tomorrow we'll have the same stuff as in the USA in Italy.
Okay.
It never happened. So the market is really, really poor. There is something that is moving, because today we have some directors, some young directors that obviously played video games, looked for visual effects from big scale projects and stuff like that.
Sure.
So there are some ideas, but the problem is that they doesn't know how it works. So maybe the directors say, okay, let's do... what I can say, a storm with a ocean, with a big scale, waves and stuff like that. And it needs to be ready tomorrow morning.
Right.
And we have 6 hours to do everything and to be rendered. And you say, okay, it needs time to be done in the right way, to have the right quality. And they say, okay, you have a lot of button. Maybe there is a button to do stuff like that.
Right.
And, you know, there is something really complex to solve this problem. We have... to wait, there is something that is moving, but again, the problem today is also the budget. So we're talking about a money problem. And mm-hmm. There are not so much companies ready to do complex stuff. And the other problem is that when we have good artists, the artists are went away from Italy. So we have many great artists around the world, but there is
yes.
maybe 10 artists with the great skills here in Italy. And that's
right.
not so good. So... for example, it is complex also for me, because obviously I work as a freelancer, but you know, projects sometimes are really big, so I have my own team.
You need to hire, yeah.
Not, right, and it's complex where I can find a guy. So I have my friends that work with me since years, but the school is also a great way to create new artists. So the idea is that older artists can create new artists for the market, and maybe we can change something. I know maybe... it's not realistic, but you know, I think that we have to do something to have new artists, to have new projects and stuff like that. But there is something
yeah.
that is moving, but it is really, really slow. And you know, if you have no money to do large scale visual effects, you can do it. You can find
right.
a good compromise. Maybe I'm a great artist, I can do great stuff, but you know, I cannot do it without money. That's the problem.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or maybe without the time, that's another problem. So maybe you have the money, but we have no time. So
yeah.
it's impossible.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I know what you mean. I mean, it's very, very tough. There's a lot of moving parts. But I think that, you know, software and hardware and the fact that people are working from home and there's talent still out there, there's people learning, you know, a lot of people who are locked at home and they're spending some of that time learning new stuff and they're taking this opportunity to be there. I think all of that's going to make things a little bit easier. I think it's all going to start coming together, you know, even the USD thing that we talked about before, we'll
yeah.
have something that we can exchange data with. We'll have, so I think that the world, you know, that you're already set up in is going to be something that we're all going to be able to take advantage of at some point. I think it's kind of great. Honestly.
Yeah, yeah.
I think this is something that, I mean, don't you think this is something that you have an opportunity to sort of to lead that way? Say, well, here's how you do it. Here's how we do this kind of thing. And here's how we can work from home. And here's how we can do. I mean, I've worked with a lot of great artists around the world, because same thing, right? You were talking about, just when you're really good, you end up going to other places. So
right.
there's a lot of international people all over the place. But don't you think it'd be good to all just be able to not have to worry about location anymore?
I think, yes, that's really great. I think maybe the only problem we had is work just with the problem with the by remote, because, you know, there are many markets where you can work by remote without problem, for example, for commercial, or maybe some stuff for the video games. But bigger projects can do it, cannot do it in the previous, maybe since last year, because, you know, the problem is the security, obviously, because you can't move the stuff around on the workstation and stuff like that outside the company. So, but today, this is changing, because now every big company had to change the workflow, so they can have the stuff inside their security workstation. And the artist can be in Italy or maybe in Asia or maybe everyone or maybe in Africa. It's not a problem. So you need just a connection and the skills. So that's really great. I think that this, I know that it's a really bad moment. This pandemic chaos is really bad, but it's moving around stuff in the computer graphics market. And I think that it's great because it's changing something that maybe it was changing too slow. It was too complex because, you know, if you have no needs to change the workflow and have the possibility to have the guys around the world, the visual effects company obviously doesn't work on this side because it is not needed. If you like to work with me, come with me here inside my office. But today it needs to be done. So they had to move and it was done really fast in maybe days or maybe weeks. And now we are ready. So it was since years that it was impossible and maybe they done it in 1 week. So now it's done. It's done.
And so the you know, like they say in the US, the cat's out of the bag. Now you have the opportunity to do this and to keep working this way. And while it would be nice to go back to offices, maybe it's also such an opportunity to think about the what doors this opens up for us to do, you know, working with people remotely, and also, you know, now especially for big studios, in terms of, you mentioned the security thing is, you know, if you remote desktop into things, and people are working mostly with remote desktop, not only do you manage your security, but you also, the artist doesn't have to worry about buying hardware and software or anything. They just work remote.
Right.
You know?
For freelancers, it's really expensive because, you know, you have all the software, you have the workstation, you have the many workstations, because usually I work with three workstations because maybe one is simulating and the other is rendering. And this one I'm using to create the scene. So you need a lot of money to be a freelancer. So that's good because you have no needs. So that's great.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. No, I agree. I think there's some very interesting ideas that are going on in terms of where the world of remote working is and how that exists. So very, very interesting. Now, you mentioned you did something for Gnomon. You did some Gnomon DVDs. Well, around what year was that? Was it Gnomon DVDs? For Gnomon, Gnomon School?
Oh, yes. Actually, I released it past year to workshop for Clarice again. It was the first one. It was an introduction. And the second one, it was a little bit more complex. So it was something to create a really complex environment, a natural environment, using Houdini, Terrigen, and Clarice. And then now I'm working on some new stuff. So we moved to Houdini. So they asked me to create some introduction to particles. So we are going to release two new workshops. The first one will be just the introduction to particles effects. And the second one will be a little bit more complex. So maybe, let's say, mid-level, not the advanced one, because, you know, it needs time to move to higher skilling set inside Houdini. So I prefer to be really slow with the artists because it's a little bit more complex to understand how it works. So it's really nice because I'm working on the first one now in these days. So we hope to release at the end of November if everything will be fine, because, you know, my wife is pregnant, as I said. We are waiting the new baby for end of December, so I have to I have not so much time to work, you can imagine.
Of course.
And we hope to release the second one if possible before the end of the year, or maybe in January. So I think it would be a really nice project because, you know, also about Udine, I think it needs to be taught in a different way because many guys are scared about Udine. They think that we are talking about a black box, really complex with, you know, you have to know the way to use the bags to develop stuff. You have to know Python or maybe expression and stuff like that. Okay, right. That's right. You have this kind of feature, but it is, again, a 3D tool. It is a tool for artists. So I'm trying to use a different approach teaching the software. I'm trying to emulate what I had to do because I had to move from 3ds Max to Udine. So I said, okay, it is really complex. It seems really amazing, but let's try to think about it how an artist can think. So let's start from the artist level and then we can move to the maybe technical guy. So that's a different way. I'm trying to make it more simple at the beginning. So we try to understand how to use it as another software. Okay, we have maybe some different feature, like we have the possibility to create expression everywhere. We have the possibility to create code, but let's use it step by step. In this way, maybe you can be productive and then you can decide step by step to move to higher skill. And maybe you can decide to stop at this level and to be just an artist using the Udine because right. maybe you don't need the really complex stuff. Or maybe you right. can say, okay, I'm in love with this really crazy high skill stuff. And you say, okay, let's move to the dark side of Udine, okay? you know, it's yeah, yeah, your, yeah. you can decide, you're free. So I prefer to do something like that because last year I had I'd done a course about Udine in another school, not my own school. Mm-hmm. And I had some guys that went back to the for the second year at the same course because the previous year they had the same course, but they had really big problem because the previous guy was teaching is a great guy with Udine, mm-hmm. but he done a really complex course. They worked just with VEX code and everything done in this way. So they said, okay, we know a lot of code, but we know nothing about how to do a visual effects inside Udine.
Okay.
So, okay, it's great to know the great stuff can do with a Udine, but then you are not productive because, you know, if I asked you, okay, please create an explosion and you say, I have no idea how to do it. And maybe I can right. say, okay, please write a procedural code to create, a complete entire procedural home model. And you say, okay, I can do it with the code. Okay, that's great. But it is not complete because you are right. a really small focus artist. So you right. are not productive.
So yeah. Absolutely. No, I totally get it. Totally get it. That's really interesting. Really interesting. Yeah. So all of these things that you're doing, you said this is for the Gnomon workshop, right? So this
yes,
is part of
yes.
the... Okay, so that's not part of the Gnomon school, but it's part of the Gnomon workshop where people will be able to have online
right.
stuff. Yeah, which is great. It's great. Yeah, I did some Gnomon DVDs back in 2006 or so, five, six. So
when we had the DVD because the first one I done for Mentor Race was on the DVD. Now we have just right. the subscription, so everything is changing.
Yeah, everything's changing now, so it's different. But yeah, that's really cool. That's really cool. Well, listen, Sandro, this has been a fantastic conversation. Thank you so much for doing that.
And
thank
me.
You. Thank you for staying up late on your end. I'm sorry, but you know, time zones we're making it work, so it's good to
do
that.
I know. It was a pleasure, Chris. It was really a great opportunity. So, thanks again. Really,
Absolutely.
Really nice.